Welcome to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Our annual forum features Chapelboro's movers and shakers debating the big issues affecting our community and you. And it begins now.
In Chapel Hill and Carrboro and Orange County, we pride ourselves on being inclusive and welcoming for all. How can we preserve and protect those values in a world where the GA is passing HB2 and the governor is turning away refugees? And are we doing a good enough job here in our community developing those values and defending those values in our own right? We're talking inclusivity this hour. I'm Aaron Keck, happy to be your moderator, joined now by six great people. In no particular order, Chapel Hill Police Chief Chris Blue, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
From the Islamic Association of Raleigh, Mohammed Al-Gamal, thank you.
Good morning.
Civil rights activist Braxton Fushi. Braxton, thanks.
Thank you.
Attorney and former Chapel Hill Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt, thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
Director of the LGBTQ Center at UNC, Dr. Terry Phoenix, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And because we can't have an inclusivity panel without someone from the Carrboro Board of Aldermen, Damon Siles joining us here as well. Damon, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Aaron.
So we've got a lot to talk about this hour, and obviously we're not going to be able to get through it all. We're talking about inclusivity. It is a topic with a variety of facets. If you're listening out there and you have questions for us, you can send a tweet with the hashtag WCHLForum. We'll try to get those questions on the air as soon as possible. Just let us know what you want us to ask. But let's start by talking about the issue that everyone starts their conversations by talking about in North Carolina, at least for the last couple of months, House Bill 2. House Bill 2 is still on the books, General Assembly, meeting in Raleigh, no word yet what they're going to do, if anything. I want to start actually by asking Chris Blue a question, and this is half facetious and half real. If House Bill 2 supporters are to be believed, then allowing people to use the restroom in accordance with their gender identity creates a major public safety issue that has to be addressed. There are right now dozens of businesses in downtown Chapel Hill that are doing just that. Has there been a public safety issue?
No. No.
All right.
I can go on if you like.
Please do.
I will say that the bill as written doesn't contain enforcement provisions. Mm. We've instructed reminded our employees of that, and they can read that for themselves. And I don't think data support that there's a risk that bill addressed.
Mm-hmm. And let me turn to Terry Phoenix, because you can draw the conclusion from that there is no public safety issue with House Bill 2. I think there actually is a public safety issue, and it goes exactly the other way, right?
It does go the other way. Transgender individuals face a lot of discrimination and harassment for using bathrooms. They are policed. People look at what bathroom you go into and whether or not you have a right to be in there. And so there is a safety issue, but it's just not the direction that the General Assembly addressed.
So throw the floor open to everyone. What can we do in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County, our community, to be inclusive, even over and above the fact that House Bill 2 is still on the books?
Are you referencing, Aaron, just the issue in the targeted population of HB2, or is the question a more general one?
I think in this context, the targeted population of HB2. What can we do to make sure if our community is one with the value of being inclusive and welcoming towards LGBT people in particular? What can we do to accomplish that?
I've seen some businesses do some things that I think are really positive. You know, shortly after the bill was passed, I started seeing signs in a number of different businesses that were intentionally welcoming of LGBT people, you know, rainbow symbols and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. and people that were very clear about the fact that people could use the bathroom that conformed with their gender identity. Mm-hmm. And I think being intentional about that sent a really clear message and sends a really clear message.
Other thoughts?
I think businesses are important because that's where we all enter businesses every day, and that's it's part. And we leave our homes, we go to work, and we go shopping, and we engage with each other in the public realm. And where businesses step up and provide that welcoming sense, then I think that helps enhance the larger community. And the welcoming nature of the community. But, of course, we need institutional responses mm-hmm. as well, and particularly in a town that relies on a single institution so much as this one does, the University of North Carolina. that the university needs to step up. Now, of course, there are challenges because it's a state institution and there's a state law that's in place that I think the university claims is determines what their response would be, the state law would be. But we recently have heard from federal courts about how preemptive federal laws should be governing the response of institutions like the University of North Carolina. And I would hope that the university over the last week, since the Fourth Circuit decision came down from Virginia, has begun thinking a little bit more about which law they need to be following. As an attorney, I'll just tell you, generally the answer is the federal law.
Terry Phoenix, you're involved in a lot of these conversations on campus right now. What is the university doing? Are they doing enough? Should they do more?
Well, one of the things that we are doing is trying to identify as many gender nonspecific bathrooms as possible on campus, and also to make sure that where we can make more of them, you know, we do. I think this often gets limited to a discussion about bathrooms, and I actually think HB2 is a lot broader than that. I mean, just the right after the passage, one of the things that people were concerned about was our non-discrimination statement at the university. And I was very happy that we didn't have to change our non-discrimination statement. And so I think that they got that right. I too would like to see them maybe pay more attention to Title IX and some of the guidance we have from the federal EEOC regarding the bathroom use, though.
Institutions also include towns, so let me turn to Damon Siles from the Carver Report of Alderman. What is the town, or what can the town as an institution do?
Well, one of the things that we encouraged local businesses and employers to do in the wake of HB2 passing was to do exactly what we're talking about, which is put up signs welcoming all members of the community, but particularly those who've been targeted by this legislation. We've seen that happen in both towns all over the place. But we've also seen some businesses actually start to re-sign their restrooms to be welcoming to people of all genders. So it's really taken on a life of its own in the business community, which has been good to see. I think the town also has a responsibility, the towns have a responsibility to build partnerships with other communities around the state to oppose this law, and that's been happening as well. We're seeing resolutions calling for repeal of the House bill all over the state, from Greenville to Asheville and in between. And I think continuing to build that kind of momentum from local governments, which is another entity that this bill attacks, is the power of local governments, will be important as we figure out whether there are opportunities for legal action.
Carborough was the first municipality to speak out against this bill and scheduled your own special session on Saturday after the bill passed in order to do that. Have you been happy with the response statewide from municipalities?
I think, you know, we've even most recently had the city of Raleigh finally adopt a resolution or at least endorse a statement from the Raleigh Chamber of Commerce. We're seeing the kind of that Carborough spirit spread across the state a little bit, and it's been satisfying to see. But we need to do more. We need to, I think, reach out into unexpected places for partnerships, and we are working on that.
Chris Blue, you were nodding your head through that.
I was just... acknowledging the Carborough spirit.
Let me bring Braxton Frushi and Muhammad Delgamal into this conversation. Again, so many different aspects of the larger conversation about inclusivity. But let me actually begin with Muhammad Elgamal, because the other large conversation that we're having, again, statewide and here locally, is with regard to, and you were talking about it even before we started, Islamophobia in the U.S., in North Carolina, in Chapel Hill in particular. And this is something that we were, I guess, almost hoping had peaked last year, but seems to be increasing even more as we get further into the presidential election. How inclusive, how welcoming is this community, Chapel Hill, to Muslims, to refugees, to people who are disparaged in political discourse around the country?
Sure. I just, before I start Islamophobia, just to add to what was said already in terms of House Bill 2, I think we should look at also the House Bill 2 vis-a-vis the Title IX, because I think there is a collision or there is some contradiction there, and I think the federal law should really provide the necessary protection for everyone. So having said that, in terms of Islamophobia, Islamophobia basically is bigotry based on unfounded really feeling or information about Islam and Muslims. I think this is because largely because of lack of education, lack of knowledge, lack of even the people who are really seeking the highest office in this country should really know what they are really talking about. And especially from the people that, in terms of Republican people, including the front runners, when they are really talking about banning Muslims from entering the United States, and how they can ban, for example, King Hussein, or, I mean, King Abdullah, for example, or the King of Saudi Arabia, who are really allies of this country. In terms of Islam and Muslims, of course, we are really talking about a lot about this. Islam is a religion of peace, as we talked before. I think if we really link in terms of the public perception about Islam and terrorism, there is maybe some talk about that. But I just like to point out that Muslims are suffering from terrorism like everyone else. Of course, there are some Muslims who are really bad apples, so to speak. And we are all against that. We are all against violence, against terrorism, and we together we have to fight that. But, for example, ISIS. I think if you look at the Muslims all over the world, most of them are different or differing. They have different opinions about different things, but are all united against ISIS. Muslims are suffering from ISIS more than anyone else. In terms of violence, we suffered here, and of course, Chief Chris Blue knew about that in terms of what happened to our three winners, the Barakats and Abu Salha, who suffered from the very violence act that we are really talking about. So actually linking Islam and Muslim to tourism is unfounded, but unfortunately we see the data. The data is, you know, who are really supporting, for example, the statements made by Trump is very scaring. We are talking about 41%, even if this 10% is still scaring, you know, that, you know, they are supporting database for Muslims in this country. I just like to define the American. Who is the American? American is black, white, in between, Muslims, Jewish, Christians, and none of the above, of course. It is the melting pot of the. If this is America, so to single out one class over the, you know, I think this is wrong. It's against the national security of the country. It is against the harmonious relationship in the community. We have to unite the community in order to be strong and maintain our strength and leadership in the world. We cannot really say we single one class of people in this country and call for democracy in other parts in the world. That is actually inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And I think we, well, as a community and as different class of people, I think in terms of we really have a role to educate people. Some people in the Republican, especially frontrunners, they said, well, mosques, for example, or the masjids are not open for the community. I think all of you know that the masjid is open 24 hours a day, mm-hmm. and everybody is welcome to the masjid.
I want to highlight a point that you made in there, which is that inclusivity. We talk about inclusivity, and just sort of in framing this conversation that we're having this hour, we were thinking about inclusivity as a Chapel Hill Carborough value, an Orange County value, and how are we doing as a community in manifesting that. But you made the point in there, and this is exactly right. This isn't a Chapel Hill value. This is an American value, which Chapel Hill is trying to manifest in practice. But there shouldn't be anything unique to Chapel Hill when it comes to manifesting that value in practice. How good of a job, though, do you think we're doing in Chapel Hill of doing that? Because I'm thinking about what Asis Sanjar said, and Mark, you were there at the town council meeting, and it was really poignant words that I am proud to be a Muslim, he said, and I am proud to be a Chapel Hillian because this is a community where I can say that. But he said that less than a year after that tragic shooting at Findlay Forest, where it becomes evident to us that Islamophobia is present here, too. So how good of a job are we doing?
I think overall, North Carolina as a state, and especially Chapel Hill as a city, and Raleigh and all this area are very welcoming communities, and we are proud to be here. And, you know, it's, again, we are contributing to the community as much as we can. If you look to, if you go to any hospital, you will find Muslim doctors. If you go to any university, you'll find lots of Egyptian professors. If you look to janitors, we have also janitors. We have police officers. We have people from all sorts of the society. So we are proud to be Americans, first. We are also proud to be in Chapel Hill, Raleigh, and you know, the Raleigh Triangle Park area. I mean, we are contributing to the society. So in terms of the being welcome here, I think we are. I think I personally feel comfortable in this society, in this town, in this state, of course in America. But I think what scares me, because, you know, if you look at the Nazis, how it started like that. People are just talking about, and after that you have a series of actions, and we don't like to wait until this happens. I think as a community and as a radio station like, you know, 97.9 and other media, I think we should really say and clearly say Islam and Muslims are not a security concern to the society. We are on the opposite of that.
I want to give Braxton Frushi a chance to weigh in.
Well, I think it's a slap at the, quote, sanctuary cities. Anything that Raleigh can do to step on our necks or step on our head or make it a little more difficult for us and what we represent is a threat to them, and why, I don't know, because we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, we got two hands up, Mark.
I think I know why, Braxton. I think when you look at a collection of actions by the legislature, HB2 being only the most recent, the sanctuary city attack, that was just a bunch of hot air coming out of the governor's mansion and the legislature, because what were we doing but following the law and implementing, you know, welcoming policies? All the way back to immediately after the U.S. Supreme Court declared parts of the Voting Rights Act void, they, within days, passed voting restrictions here in North Carolina. These three things have something in common. And the commonality is the interests of those who have the majorities in the North Carolina House and the Senate and the and who are in the governor's mansion believe that identifying an other will keep them in power politically. And all three of these are doing the same thing. They are demonizing transgender individuals with the HB2. They are demonizing and labeling as terrorists everyone who identifies as a Muslim, and they are actively trying to find ways to minimize the African American vote and its impact in North Carolina. Those three things are all tied together. This is part of a national movement to secure state legislators for conservative Republicans, and it's working here in North Carolina. And you know, Chapel Hill has historically stood against these kind of efforts, which is why I think we feel so strongly and are trying to respond to this as quickly as we can, because we recognize it for what it is.
Mohammed?
Well, I think what Mark is saying is correct, and this is not new, actually. I mean, if you look at the 1700 or 1800 or, you know, early 1900, I mean, they used to say the otherization of different people. For example, the African-American, the word in was popular. It was used to actually use it for scaring tactics and to win some elections. They have derivatives of that now. And now the latest one is, for example, the sexual orientation and the Muslims or in general the otherization of so whoever is others, I think they are using it for scaling tactics, and this politics is old, as we know, so I think we should really be aware of that.
Quick question for Chris Blue. Mark Kleinschmidt mentioned the sanctuary city policy. Again, this was, what, last year that the General Assembly stepped in and banned sanctuary cities.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means. But that does affect policing and the choices that police departments make with their limited resources and what they can and can't do. Chief Blue, has that policy from last year affected in any way what Chapel Hill Police have done?
No, it hasn't. I mean, that legislation talked about things that you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't necessarily restrict you from talking about the things that you will do to reflect your community values. So without going into a long policy discussion about policing policies, I'll say that the practices that we had in place were not changed by that legislation, nor would they be.
Damon Stiles?
Yeah, I just say that the same is true in Carrboro. We have a similar approach to this issue as the Chapel Hill Police do. You know, our view has been for many years in Carrboro that our police department is not the immigration department. That's not our job. I think that's a good example of how communities like ours and at the institutional level can support people who are being targeted by extremists by actively seeking out opportunities to say, we are not going to participate in this. We have, in the wake of HB2, other opportunities. I appreciated Chief Blue's comment earlier today about the fact that HB2 lacks any enforcement provisions. Well, that's a great opening for us to talk about what we are not going to enforce when it comes down to complaints about people using the restroom that is congruent with their gender identity. We do not have to participate in this, and we can refuse openly to do so.
Chief Blue.
I just wanted to add very quickly, I'm glad Damon made the point about local law enforcement not being in the immigration business. That's something that we've said for a long time, and actually the passage of that legislation created a number of new opportunities for us to have that discussion in our community because people were concerned, and they've invited us to come speak to that and to what we're about and what we will and will not do. So I'm not endorsing the legislation in any way, but I will say that it's created opportunities for some dialogues that were important to have.
We got to take a break in a few minutes, but before we do, I want to jump off from those two comments and open the floor to everyone. House Bill 2 passed at the state level, and there's been a lot done here in terms of municipal organizations, businesses, individuals to speak out and act against it. The boycott against North Carolina has really hit communities, sort of urban centers, the Chapel Hill, Carrboro's, the Raleigh's, the Durham's, the Charlotte's, the Asheville's, the cities that would be more likely to speak out against this bill in the first place. We're getting sucked into the reputation as well that the entire state has of not being welcoming. And there is an extent to which that almost has to be true because we're in North Carolina. So anything that happens at the state level happens to us as well. So to what extent, and we've already had a couple people speak to this, to what extent is it possible for this community, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, to be welcoming and inclusive in a world where the General Assembly is doing what it's doing?
I think it's tremendously important that we continue to do what we normally do, is welcoming people into our area. And I think it shows for both the county. I think it's an open door, like it should be.
Terry Phoenix.
Yeah, I think one of the things that strikes me in this question is we have to be really intentionally inclusive. And when I do education, I talk about how important that is because we are going to get painted with the brush of the broader North Carolina thing that with the HB2. And so we have to be really intentional to go out of our way to say we aren't that. You know, we are welcoming and affirming, and you are welcome here.
Others, Mark Lunchman?
I think we also need to think about how our communities grow and face the challenges of being a desirable city to move to in the Sun Belt north of the United States, because we're going to continue to attract a very diverse population from all parts of the world. And that truth, I think, impacts the way we develop our community as well. And I see an intersection between efforts to limit transit options. I see an intersection with the limitations on building places for people to live affordable as well as market rate. I see limitations on other kinds of growth policies that have been advocated even here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro recently that really, at the end of the day, create an environment that says, even though we have great rhetoric around inclusivity, we're not actually going to provide you a place to be here. And we're also not going to make it easy for you to get here. And, you know, I don't believe that's the intention of some advocates, but I think that that is the result of many policies that we've been talking about as a community over the last couple of years.
We got to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation. If you're listening and you have questions, you can send them to us via Twitter. Use the hashtag WCHLForum. We'll try to get those on the air as soon as possible. We will be back with more. We're talking about inclusivity, the Chapel Hill and American value. How are we manifesting it here in our community? How can we do a better job? A lot more to talk about when we come back. You're listening to the WCHL Community Forum. Back after this.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity,
to education,
to collaboration,
to transit,
to foodies,
to innovation,
to progress,
to the environment,
to light rail,
to craft brews,
to affordable housing,
to city parks,
to kids,
to connectivity,
to business,
to culture,
to green,
to smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Summer is rapidly approaching, and fall will be here before you know it. Need some extra courses to help you prepare for college? Need to complete your high school diploma or get a GED? Looking for training or certification to help you get that dream job? Classes begin May 16th, so visit durhamtech.edu and search summer registration. Schedule a meeting with an academic advisor who will give you access to our web registration system. You'll be amazed at the great selection of interesting courses you'll find. And get ready to do great things.
Mulch is specially priced at Orange County Solid Waste Management now until April 30th. $15 for a 3-cubic-yard scoop. That's 40% off the regular price at the Orange County Landfill, 1514 Eubanks Road. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 a.m. to noon. Trucks and trailers only, please. Bring a tarp to cover your load and cash or check to pay. For more information, call 919-968-2788. The Orange County Mulch Sale, $15 a scoop. It's the best deal around for high-quality mulch. Now through April 30th at the Landfill on Eubanks Road.
Welcome back to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce, Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, Kidzoo Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government. Once again, here's Aaron Keck.
And we're talking about inclusivity this hour, joined by six distinguished panelists, Mark Kleinschmidt, Chris Blue, Damon Siles, Terry Phoenix, Mohammed Al-Kamal, and Braxton Fushi. Again, if you've got questions, you can send them to us. Use the hashtag WCHLForum, and we'll get those on the air, too. I want to turn to Braxton Fushi now to start the second half of our conversation. We've talked about House Bill 2. We've talked about Islamophobia. We've yelled at the General Assembly already, so we've got that ticked off the list. But we haven't talked about racial disparities yet, and I know you've been working on this issue for many, many years. There are a variety of aspects of this issue in the Chapel Hill, Carver, Orange County community. We've got still a lot of work left to go on the Rogers Road community that's in the process of being done. There's still an achievement gap in our K-12 schools, which continues to linger even though everyone in the school districts are actively working to do something about it. We've still got a big statue on campus that looks out on Franklin Street, and we don't have to say anything more about that because we all know what we're talking about, but that's only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to racial issues on campus. And racial disparities exist in policing, even though we've got police departments and Chris Blue here from Chapel Hill that are actively working on that issue as well. So how good of a job, with all of that in mind, is Chapel Hill and Carrboro and Orange County doing to be inclusive and welcoming to people of color in our community?
Well, if I was grading them, I would probably give them a C.
Is that an improving C or a declining C?
It's an improving C.
Okay.
And it was strange because as I was riding in a car yesterday and we were just talking in general, and the question came up, about the celebrations. And I said, you know, if 100 black kids were walking down the middle of Franklin Street and they stopped and built a fire, they'd be arrested. But if 2,000 white kids come from campus and build a bonfire downtown, doesn't have a parade permit, black kids wouldn't have one either. But just building the bonfire, nobody gets arrested. But those 100 black kids are going to get arrested. And I said, I wonder what Chief Blue would say about that.
Chief Blue, what would you say about that?
What would you say,
Well, we brought you here for one purpose.
This was it, right
this
here.
This was it.
You didn't send me this one ahead of time, though. I really would like to think that's not true. And I know there's a lot of history and experience behind that question, and I know it's somewhat rhetorical. I do think that we have disparities. There's no question about that. I'm actually proud of the discussion in the law enforcement world the last few years about the work we need to do. What has been interesting and frustrating and encouraging all at the same time is when I talk to my law enforcement colleagues about very clear, disparate outcomes. I think when the first real detailed data came out a few years ago about disparities in traffic stops, the almost universal response from law enforcement was, that can't be right. That can't be right. Well, we got over that, and now we are struggling with why is that still the case when we are trying to own our responsibility and in terms of what those impacts might be. So I say all that to say that I'm really encouraged about the dialogue, but we have a lot of work to do. And if you look at the data now compared to 4 years ago, you probably don't see a dramatic improvement. And that remains very frustrating for me and my colleagues because we think we're having very enlightened conversations, but the outcomes are still pretty troubling. I don't know where I'm going with any of that, except as to say I'm encouraged by the dialogue. And I say that across the state. I would submit that law enforcement in North Carolina, as a group, is having more consistently progressive discussions about disparities in policing than just about any state you'll find in the country. That does not suggest that we don't have a long way to go.
Braxton?
But aside from policing, we have other problems, too. The gap has been there for 25 to 30 years, and nobody can seem to solve it. And workforce housing in this town is, you just can't find it.
Mm-hmm.
Developers are not, they don't, it's not fitting their bottom line, so they're not building that. And workforce housing and it's a different brand, I think. And if you look at the population that's serving, you can't get the type of housing that you need in either, nowhere in this county, at $7.50 an hour. With a family of anywhere from 2 to 4 kids. I mean, it's not profitable for builders to do that, but somehow we must, as a town, as a county, as a city, find a solution to that. I think maybe a good way to start is look at the big green track we have out there.
Mark Lunchman?
I think that our former county commissioner, Moses Carey, had a really interesting idea about 10 years ago that would address much of that. Because one of the biggest difficulties for about creating workforce housing and housing that would actually allow for a diverse population to live and work here in Chapel Hill is the cost of the dirt. The cost of the dirt to build those houses on is expensive because of the school system that the children who would live in those homes would go to. I actually believe that one way to moderate this is to go back to Commissioner Carey's proposal and revisit the idea of merging the school systems. I think if our school systems were merged and you could live anywhere in Orange County and still have the same quality education, that at least between Northern and Southern Orange, there would that part of the pressure, you know, I know that's not all of the pressure on housing costs, but it's a significant part, would be moderated a great deal. And then we would just suffer from the same problems Durham and Wake have, which is just generally we're so desirable that demand is high to move here. Mm-hmm. But if we could have removed that one that we created, which was this separate school system, I think that would have enormous impact, not only on housing prices, but probably I also believe it would have an impact on our ability to address the achievement gap. And I hope to hear some of that. I dare you to ask that question at 12 o'clock
during the
K-12 panel.
We'll pass it along to DG. He's hosting. I should let the listeners know that every time someone brings up the possibility of merging the school districts, there always seems to be a sense that there's a majority of Orange County residents that are against it. In this room, a majority of people were nodding their heads when Mark Klontschmidt was speaking just now. So there is significant support for that proposal, at least in this room. Damon Stiles, you work with the Carver Board of Aldermen. You're on the Carver Board of Aldermen, in fact. You're talking about housing issues right now. What needs to happen in order to, getting back to Braxton's point about workforce housing and making sure that housing is affordable in the first place in a community that's still desirable, maybe with a population ceiling, what needs to happen?
Well, I appreciate Braxton bringing this conversation to a higher level and identifying that this isn't, that race and racism in our communities permeate every issue, not just policing, but housing, environmental justice, and so on. And I want to kind of connect Braxton's comment to something Terry said about being intentional about how we make change. And I think, you know, also I'll just say, I'm gratified that Braxton gives a C to the community for progress on this issue. That might be generous. But I think we have to start being more intentional as towns about integrating social justice considerations in every policy decision we make, mm-hmm. and being explicit about things like race and racism and how the decisions we make influence racial disparities in our communities. Until we start doing that in a systematic way, in an intentional way, I don't think we can be said to be making real progress. We can be said to having good conversations about making progress, as Chief Blue said, but yeah, it's going to be hard work, and I think that's work that we in the Carborough Board of Aldermen have been taking small steps toward. We devoted a retreat, our annual retreat this past year, to talking about racial equity in particular and how we're going to start to try to incorporate racial equity considerations in our decision-making. But, I mean, we're not anywhere near being in a position to do it in a systematic way, unfortunately.
So what would it look like if you were in that position and you were doing it in a systematic way? How would meetings go? How would policy go?
Well, I think just like we expect our staff to identify the financial impacts of our decisions, we would need to expect our staff and ourselves to identify the social equity impacts of our decisions. When we make decisions about, for example, we have a public hearing at tonight's Board of Aldermen meeting about a draft community climate action plan. This is a report drafted by our climate task force. It's a great report, comprehensive approaches for the community on addressing climate change. What we haven't gotten into yet is implementation. And we've talked a lot about how implementation needs to include some kind of a cost-effectiveness matrix. But I think part of that matrix needs to include social equity. And I think we can actually achieve environmental justice goals and climate action goals together, because when you, for example, improve housing stock by weatherizing, improving the quality of housing and so on, you actually improve your on the metrics of in carbon emissions, for example. So you can actually achieve both goals at the same time. All of these things are connected, but we have to do them with intention.
Terry Phoenix, I want to give you a chance to jump in because you were nodding through a lot of that.
Yeah, I think too often discussions about inclusivity are partitioned off and held separate, and they really should be integrated.
At the inclusivity panel.
Need to be integrated into every decision. I mean, at the university, one of the things that I talk about is I want the LGBT Center to become, you know, not necessary, because we have gotten all of the other organizations and units and departments at the university thinking about issues of sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. So it's not just the LGBTQ center that brings that up. You know, it's not just the Stone Center that brings up issues of race. I think that it's everybody's job, and we should be doing it in every conversation that we have.
I think that's a really good point, the idea that the LGBTQ center shouldn't be necessary because everyone should be an advocate, right? Yeah. Is that...
I think there's always going to be a place for building community, you know, and when I say it, I don't think that it's... I really don't think it's going to be unnecessary at some point, but because I think that there's always going to be a place, until our society changes, there's always going to need to be a place for people to find community and deal with some of the heterosexism and transphobia that they face. But ultimately, yeah, I want everybody to be thinking about those issues.
Sort of getting back to the House Bill 2 question that we started with, do you see that debate as, if there's a silver lining to it, helping move in that direction? Because there are a lot of people now who are aware of transgender issues in the way they weren't before.
Yeah, I've had a number of people ask me that question, and I find it challenging for a law that's causing so much anxiety and harm and, you know, really impacting the community in negative ways. It's hard to say this is a silver lining.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that there are conversations happening at this point that weren't prior to HB2. I just wish we didn't have to have HB2 to have the conversations.
Braxton, did you have a point earlier?
Well, I think one of the things that the county, the cities have to be aware of when they're having discussions, they need to look around the room and see who's missing from those conversations. One of my key things is that you have to have everybody at the table when the conversation starts. You can't bring another group into the conversation halfway into the discussion.
Are we doing a good job with that?
No.
No?
No. I mean, you can look in any boardroom and see what folk look like. You don't see many people in there looking like me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think you miss opportunities. That was a big opportunity in this community that got missed a couple of weeks ago with R.D. Smith. I think people just... they don't look at it the way we look at it. The great opportunity that was missed is that his whole funeral should have been held at Smith Middle School, but there are the answers on a piece of paper that said, we don't do this in our schools. And, I mean, it roused me that didn't happen. And I just think, you know, for somebody as much as R.D. has meant to this community in so many different ways, other than education, town, we should have made that happen. But it didn't happen. And that's the kind of opportunities that I think we really, you know, we can't continue with this room and leaving a lot of folk out.
Damon Stiles?
Braxton, thank you for saying what you said about the importance of the fact that you see it differently. Because what we should be asking whenever some issue comes before us is, how do the people who are most directly impacted by something, how do they see it, right? What does a transgender or gender nonconforming person feel about House Bill 2 and what our reaction ought to be to it as a community? What makes our community a safe space for trans people? Well, ask trans people. I'm the wrong person to ask, right? What makes this community a safe space for people of color? I'm not the person to ask that question. So we need to be relying on the intelligence and creativity of the people who are actually being targeted by this kind of stuff before thinking that we have the answers.
I want to hear from Mohammed Al-Ghamal because we haven't yet in the second half, and I think Braxton's point speaks to the absence of Muslims in the conversation as well when it comes to issues like Syrian refugees and. What do you say to Braxton's point?
Well, I think is in terms of the first, the representation of every sector of the society should be represented, or at least, the commission's board should really be hearing from these people directly, I think, in order to make an informed decision. But going back again to refugees, especially Syrian refugees, I think we should really go to the root causes of this. And I think we should welcome the refugees, as we are really doing now, and even more. Remember, the root causes of that is we really created that. I mean, we means the Western society actually made that. We made a mess, actually, in the Middle East, and we did not really clean it up. And then we are really blaming those victims, actually, who are really coming here. I mean, I think the American values is, by nature, is welcoming community, and I think Chapel Hill and Raleigh are doing that, and I think we should continue doing this. But I think in terms of, in you know, to include people of color, people of various Muslims, actually, in the conversation of everything, so we could really have a better community, better decisions. So,
follow-ups to that? We've got a few minutes left, and I want to talk about one area of inclusivity that, Braxton, you touched on already, and we've spoken to it, but haven't really spoken to it directly, and that's economic inclusivity, the idea that if Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County are to be welcoming places, they need to be diverse, not just in terms of religious diversity, racial diversity, but also economic diversity. This is a goal that we're constantly trying to achieve, and it's difficult because we're a welcoming community, we're a desirable community, with a limited population, so more people coming in than we have space for, or housing for at the very least, and that's driving up the cost and making it a little bit more difficult to be as economically diverse as we would like. There are things that we can do to be more economically diverse and to be more economically welcoming to a larger and more inclusive group of people. What is step one? David Stiles.
Well, I think step one is avoiding the temptation we often fall into of separating those things from one another, economic diversity, racial diversity, and so on. We know just from looking at the data that what permeates every one of these issues is racism, whether it's poverty, housing, food insecurity, whatever it is. And I think once we just get honest about that conversation, then we start to make an impact. And it also gives us some direction in where to put our resources. If we know that the common denominator is race and racism, we can focus on uplifting the voices of and improving the quality of life of people of color in our community. And then you actually improve a lot for everyone in the community.
Mark Lanschmidt, you worked on this issue.
Well, I kind of come back to the point that we're giving a lot of, and we have always given a great lip service, and we know the right words to speak in these situations. Yet we see our minority populations, our low income population, are actually name a minority classification diminish in number over the years, and so actually the actual diversity of our community has become, and by any measure, less and less and less over the last 30, 40 years. And, you know, over the last 6 years, since the Great Recession, and the community at least had some leadership that was saying, you know, we need to grow in a different way in order to be inclusive. But as Braxton mentioned before, we're seeing the voices that make decisions now becoming whiter, straighter, and richer. And those who don't meet those criteria are actually, I'm just be blunt, are actually being targeted for removal from the boards. Now, I think that we need to be honest about the power and the importance of those voices among our policymakers. And we need to understand that when they're gone, that we're missing something very valuable, and that all we're left with are these words about inclusivity and diversity, and the actions that we've been trying to do over the last 6 years, whether it be growth policies, whether it be the conversations that following the crimes of Finley Forest and the murder of our three winners last year, the conversations of bringing people together to actually hear about what the needs were, are they gone? That's all going to disappear. And you cannot overstate the importance of that.
Terry Phoenix.
Well, when you were bringing up another issue, it made me think about, we haven't talked about issues of disability at all today, and that's another topical area that I think we need to be thinking about with respect to inclusion and institutional policies and practices.
And getting back to Braxton's grading, what grade would you give?
I would probably say a C or a D. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do we need to do?
I think that in design of new structures and new services, we need to be thinking about who is going to be not able to access this thing that we are building, and really think about that ahead of time and start utilizing the principles of inclusive of universal design. I mean, there's a whole area of guidance that we could be relying on to create new buildings and new services and new structures.
We've got about 4 minutes left, so we've got to wrap up. I just want to give everyone 30 seconds to say their closing piece. So what does, and we'll go from right to left around the room, what does Chapel Hill Carborough need to do to be louder than North Carolina when it comes to inclusivity? Braxton Fouché.
One of the things I would say is that we have to know each other's communities. If we don't, then you can't venture in that community to feel safe that you can find the right people who are willing to serve.
Mohammed Al-Ghamal?
I think to be inclusive is increasing the harmony in the community, and also it can be translated into economics or add economic value also to the society as well.
Terry Phoenix.
I would echo what Braxton said. I think people fear and disparage what they don't know and they don't understand. So I think getting to know each other and who's in our community is really important.
Damon Siles.
I would say appreciating and having a clear understanding of who is really placed at risk by the kinds of policies and laws that are being erected around us. And, you know, for those of us who are in privileged positions, step aside and let the people who are those targets drive the conversation.
Chris Blue.
Well, like Damon did, I wrote down intentionally inclusive when Terry said that. I thought that was a really interesting term. And I think we have to be intentionally inclusive always, and we have to build that muscle memory, so that's part of our normal operating, whether we're evaluating an interaction, a policy decision, a development application. We have to build those competencies, and I don't think we're there yet.
And finally, Mark Klonschmidt.
Being people and communities of goodwill isn't enough. I think we need to have honest reflections about the disparate impact of our decisions and how it impacts the communities that we say we want to be welcoming in our community.
That's going to do it for this hour of the WCHL Community Forum. Thanks again to Mark Klonschmidt, Chris Blue, Damon Siles, Terry Phoenix, Mohammed Al-Ghamal, and Braxton Fouché. You can revisit this conversation later on our website, chapelborough.com. We'll be re-airing it on WCHL over the course of the next couple of weeks. You may very well be listening to one of those re-airings right now if it's later on. We're going to continue with the WCHL Community Forum throughout the rest of today. Again, send us your questions, hashtag WCHL Forum. Bonnie Hauser is in the other room and speaking to Terry Phoenix's comment from there at the end. A reminder that today is Dine for Autism Day, so a whole bunch of restaurants in the community, including several in Carborough and Chapel Hill, Hillsborough Barbecue in Hillsborough. You can go there. They're donating 10% of their proceeds today to benefit people with autism in our community and all around the Triangle. Again, thank you for listening to this hour of the WCHL Community Forum. We'll be back with more after this.
This year's WCHL Community Forum has been presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks again to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce, Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, Kidzoo Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government.
Hi, I'm Dwight Bassett with Chapel Hill Economic Development, and we're thrilled to be the presenting sponsor for this year's WCHL Community Forum. The Economic Development Office works to attract and retain businesses and jobs in locations convenient to transit and housing, all in an effort to build a sustainable economy in which to live, work, and play. Chapel Hill is open to business and open for business every day of the year. Follow us on Twitter at CHEconDev. Chapel Hill, right on the edge of the triangle.
Hi, this is Don Rice, owner of the Molly Maid in Chapel Hill. The thought-provoking conversations taking place today on WCHL represents what this community is all about. The panelists are committed to making our community great, just like we are at Molly Maid. For 18 years, our family has been serving yours. My wife, Kathy, and I are proud to employ almost 40 people, doing our small part to keep our community vibrant and, of course, clean. As we support WCHL Community Forum, we hope you'll support our locally owned business by visiting us at mollymaid.com.
Ready to try something new this summer? Check out stand-up paddleboard yoga and fitness with Maria Finnegan Fitness. SUP yoga and SUP fitness classes are offered throughout the Triangle. Maria offers both indoor and outdoor sessions with summer classes beginning in June. Monthly classes as well as private bookings are available. This is a great idea for team building and corporate events. To learn more about SUP yoga and fitness, please visit mariafinnegan.com or email maria at mariafinnegan.com.
Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership is proud to sponsor the WCHL Community Forum. The conversations of the forum aim to inform and empower community members, and as downtown's economic development leader, we strive to do the same for the downtown business community. Downtown offers a thriving local arts and cultural community, hosts world-renowned dining, and serves as the gathering spot for young and old. To learn more, head online and visit www.downtownchapelhill.com.
This is Charlie Ferris, owner-operator of Jersey Mike's Subs on Elliott Road and Chapel Hill North. After 5 years, friends often ask if I'm sick of subs yet. The honest truth is no, and I don't think I'll ever tire the best sub sandwich on the planet. But I do have a secret. You can get any one of our mouth-watering subs on a salad. We call it our sub in a tub, and these range from the fresh and light turkey provolone to the protein-packed original Italian. We just leave out the roll and stack your favorite meats and cheeses on a bed of crisp veggies. Come try one today at Jersey Mike's Subs.
WCHL thanks the Town of Chapel Hill's Economic Development Office for presenting our 2016 Community Forum. The Economic Development Office works to attract and retain businesses and jobs in locations convenient to transit and housing, all in an effort to build a sustainable economy in which to live, work, and play. Chapel Hill is open for business, open to business every day of the year. Follow them on Twitter at CHEconDev. That's CHEconDev. Economic Development in Chapel Hill, right on the edge of the Triangle.